As soon as he recognized her on the other side of the glass window, he came to open the door.
"Hi, Stella,"
he smiled, but his eyes were guarded. "I'm on my way out. Want to get dinner with me?" The last thing she wanted to do right now was spend time with Philip. But she'd told her parents she'd consider him, and she took her promises seriously. Her parents both liked him. Maybe she could bring herself to like him as well. Also, she was 100% certain he was not the kind of guy to be with her out of pity. That was important.
"I'd love to."
The wattage on Philip's smile increased to blinding levels.
"Just give me a second to save my work."
As they traveled down the well-lit sidewalks toward the downtown restaurants, Philip settled his hand at the base of her spine. She did her best to ignore it. But after a minute or two, she put distance between them. She clenched her fingers around her purse straps. "I'm not ready for that." He let his hand drop to his side.
"Still hung up on him, I see."
"I'm working on it." She'd given her housekeeper permission to wash the sheets this week. No more Michael smell.
"He slept with my mom, Stella. That should help you get over him faster."
She stared at his bitter profile. "You slept with Heidi."
"Heidi isn't old."
"Neither is your mom." He rolled his eyes. "If you hit on our new intern, I'm going to be very unhappy with you. She's practically a baby. She's Michael's sister, by the way."
"That haughty Janie is his sister?"
"She was the best candidate."
"She was,"
he admitted grudgingly.
"She had a strong understanding of regression analysis and statistics. I can't believe she's his sister."
When they seated themselves in the restaurant, he was still muttering about Janie under his breath. "It's only been 3 years since she was in high school, Philip."
"So?"
She released an exasperated breath. Instead of bringing up how hypocritical he was, she said, "Let's talk about hobbies. Do you have any? What are they?" That lightened his mood immediately.
"I'm pretty serious about golf. I'm not bad, either. And I like going to the gym."
He sipped from his water glass, and his gaze swept over the posh interior of the restaurant. Stella waited for him to ask about her. He tapped his fingers on the table in time to the classical guitar music playing in the background. He took another drink of water.
"I alternate between lap swimming and running every day," he added.
"No martial arts?"
"Eh. I took a fencing class in college, but it seems silly in this day and age."
That meant Michael would probably trounce him in a match. She'd kind of enjoy seeing that. "I like martial arts movies," she said.
"That's so unlike you. I'm more of a documentary person myself."
As Philip droned on about the latest documentary he'd seen, Stella's mind wandered. She found herself reimagining the night of the benefit dinner. In her fantasy version of that night, Michael didn't break up with her. Instead, he declared himself helplessly in love with her. Enraged beyond all reason, Philip challenged him to a duel, and the men faced off outside next to the pool. Because they didn't have swords on hand, they used golf clubs. When she smiled at her fanciful thoughts, Philip interpreted that as encouragement, and he grew more animated as he spoke of his fascination with exposés and political commentary. Stella wondered what a match between a kendo artist and fencer would look like. It would probably be pretty funny if they were using irons and putters, assuming they had enough control not to bludgeon each other to death. They really needed a scene like this in a K-drama. She'd watch it over and over. The hero didn't even have to win. All he had to do to get the girl was fight for her. If he lost, she'd kiss him better. When they stepped out of the restaurant onto the crowded sidewalk, Philip smiled at her and captured one of her hands.
"I think we get along really well, Stella. We should do this again."
Then he leaned down to kiss her. As Michael walked with Kwan toward his favorite Korean barbecue restaurant on University Avenue, he couldn't help scanning the sidewalks for glimpses of Stella. Her house was only blocks away. While it was unlikely she'd be out doing late-night shopping, it was possible. Even so, he was unprepared when he saw her standing outside a Mediterranean restaurant across the street. Her hair was up in its usual bun. Her glasses were in place, and she wore her regular Oxford shirt, pencil skirt, and pointed pumps. His Stella. His brainy, sweet... Was that Philip James? Was he about to kiss her? Michael saw red. His muscles tensed and he lunged. Quan's firm grip on his arms drew him up short. Easy man. Before Philip's lips could touch hers, Stella turned her face away and took a step back. She pulled her hand out of his grasp, saying words that couldn't be heard from this distance but were clearly rejection. Instead of taking it like a man, Philip advanced toward her with a predatory glint in his eyes. "Okay, he's asking for it," Quan said. Quan let him go, and Michael crossed the street without consciously taking a single step. If there were cars in the way, he didn't notice them. He plowed straight through them for all he knew. Before the bastard could touch his dirty lips to Stella's side-turned face, Michael yanked him away and slammed his knuckles into Philip's eye. As Philip staggered back, Michael drew a stunned Stella into his arms. Beneath the angry surging of his heart, a sense of rightness settled in place. The feel of her, the smell of her. His. "Are you okay?" he whispered. She blinked at him in bemusement. "Did you really just punch him in the eye?"
"That little shit was about to force himself on you. Again, no one forces you. Ever."
Philip lowered the hand from his quickly swelling eye to stab a finger in Michael's direction.
"We're on a date. There was no forcing involved."
Stella pushed away from Michael and adjusted the purse straps on her shoulder. "I'm going home now. Alone. Good night."
"Stella, wait!"
Philip tried to follow her, but Michael stepped in his way.
"You heard her. She's going home alone."
When Philip looked like he might press the issue, Quan came up beside Michael. His hands hung loose at his sides, but he was poised for violence. His eyes cold.
"Do we have a problem here?"
Philip took in the barricade formed by Michael and Quan and backed off. His mouth worked like he wanted to speak, but in the end, he clenched his jaw shut, glanced longingly in Stella's retreating direction, and left. Michael squeezed Quan's shoulder.
"Thanks."
Quan's lips quirked, and he tipped his head towards Stella.
"You should go check up on her. Get a table. I'll find you there."
He ran after Stella and fell in step beside her, but instead of slowing down, she increased her pace, keeping her gaze focused straight ahead.
"I have the situation under control. Don't forget, I own a taser."
Her abruptness and impersonal tone snuck right underneath Michael's guard and irritated the shit out of him. He still dreamed about her daily. And she was seeing other people. It hadn't even been 2 whole weeks.
"Couldn't wait to test your new skills out, I see."
She grasped at her purse straps and walked even faster. The sidewalk ended, and her heels clicked over asphalt as she marched down the now residential street toward her house.
"If you wanted to sleep with him, you were going about it all wrong. You should have let him kiss you. Why didn't you? Nerves?
Go away, Michael."
"I want to know why you didn't kiss him. He's what you want, isn't he?"
She froze in her tracks. Her chest worked on rapid breaths as she stared to the side.
"Why are you following me and talking to me? I don't know how to deal with this. I don't know how I'm supposed to act or what I'm supposed to say."
"We can't act like friends."
He thought they were that, at least. She met his gaze. Beneath a mixture of streetlights and moonlight, her eyes looked watery and vulnerable.
"We're friends?"
"I hope so."
"That doesn't work for me."
She stepped away, her jaw stiff and her eyes narrowed. He thought she was angry until tears started tracking down her face.
"I don't want to be your pity friend."
His chest constricted at the sight of her tears, and he quit breathing.
"Whoever said anything about pity?"
She swiped at her cheeks as her chin quivered.
"You did? You said you were done helping me, but I still wasn't enough. You said it, and you meant it. You can't take it back now."
"I never said you. I said we."
He swallowed hard.
"You never once thought I meant me? That I'm not enough for you?"
Guileless eyes searched his face. wide from her lack of understanding.
Why would I ever think that?
Because I'm a prostitute and my dad is a criminal.
Her lips turned down and she took a step away from him.
I don't care about those things. None of that impacts who you are or how you treat me.
You're using those things as excuses because you don't want to hurt me. But I want you to know I can handle the truth. If I'm not enough for you, that's fair and I accept it. I'll get over you eventually. I don't want to be coddled or lied to because of what I am. I don't need your pity friendship.
With that, she breezed past him and sailed down the street. Her walk was fast and all business. There was no seductive swaying of hips, no grace. This was no runway walk. He loved it.
He loved her.
And she was trying to get over him. In order to get over him, she had to have fallen for him first. She knew about his escorting, his financial situation, his education, and his dad. And she still loved him.
That changed everything.
Determination coursed through him. He'd been so blinded by his insecurities that he'd pushed her away and hurt her. What he should have been doing instead was fighting for her. The fight started now. If she could trust and accept him as he was, then he could too. She deserved that kind of man. For her, he was going to be that kind of man. He followed Stella from a distance to make sure she made it into her house safely, and then he ran to find Quan. He needed help devising a battle plan. Chapter 28. A knock on her office door distracted Stella from the new algorithm she was formulating. As she swiveled around, the door opened, and an enormous bouquet of calla lilies walked into the room. Their lead receptionist, Benita, a curvy brunette in her early 40s, set the vase on the desk and exhaled through her mouth.
"Okay, that was heavy. It looks like you have an admirer."
Stella plucked a card out from between the blooms. She recognized Michael's bold scrawl immediately. "For my Stella, thinking of you. Love, Michael."
"I don't know what this means."
She stared at the note sitting in the palm of her hand. Benita craned her head to the side to read Michael's script and grinned.
"Michael is the honey you're dating, isn't he? He's quite the looker."
"We broke up."
Benita's grin turned sly.
"Looks like he wants to get back together. Are you going to give him another chance?"
Before she could reply, Philip stalked past her door. After a split second, he reversed and glowered at the bouquet on her table. An impressive black eye decorated the right side of his face.
"That son of a bitch!"
He barged into her office, headed for her flowers. She threw herself in front of them.
"What are you doing?"
"I'm going to throw those in the dumpster where they belong."
"No, you're not. They're mine."
This was her first bouquet from a boy, ever.
"I'll get you better ones," he said through his teeth. "Those have to go."
"I don't want you to get me flowers."
"We're dating, remember?"
"We're not dating. We went on one date, and I don't want another. We're not compatible at all."
Benita pursed her lips and watched Philip with raised eyebrows, obviously enjoying the drama. He approached Stella with tensed shoulders and clenched hands.
"And you're compatible with him?"
She curled her fingers around the card. Was it still compatibility if it was one-sided?
"I was really happy when he and I were together. He's a good listener. More than that, he wanted to know about me, my day, what I was doing, and..."
"All I care about is whether or not he's good in bed,"
Benita interjected. Stella bit her lip and blushed down at the carpet. The word "good" didn't do Michael justice. "Phenomenal" was more like it.
"You lucky duck."
Benita turned to Philip and grabbed his arm.
"Come on, PJ. Let's go to the kitchen. You need to ice that eye."
"PJ?" Philip grumbled under his breath and stared a few daggers at her lilies before he allowed Benita to pull him out of Stella's office. As the two of them walked down the hall, he settled his hand at the base of her spine, slipped it lower, and squeezed. Instead of smacking him as Stella thought she would, Benita brushed the light hair from his brow and clucked over his bruise. That was... interesting. Apparently, Benita didn't care that Philip was a complete hound when it came to women. That worked out just fine for Stella. She didn't have to feel bad for not asking him out again. She rotated the flower vase and fiddled with the stems. Flowers had always seemed pretty senseless to her. They stank, they wilted, and then you had to clean them up. But these were from Michael. Her phone buzzed repeatedly, and when she retrieved it from her desk drawer, she saw it was him. She considered letting it go to voicemail, but her thumb hit the talk button on its own. Hello? Did you get them? He asked. Yes, thank you. How's Philip Dexter's eye looking today?
Purple.
He made a satisfied sound, and she could almost see his evil smile. She barely refrained from sighing like a schoolgirl. His barbarism shouldn't please her like this.
It'll start turning green in a few days, he said.
You really shouldn't have given him a black eye. But she loved that he had. It made her feel special in a way she'd never known. She was a bloodthirsty villainess.
You're right. Next time I'll double punch him in the balls. If anyone's going to kiss you, it'd better be me.
After an awkward pause, he asked, Will you have dinner with me tonight? Her foolish heart leapt at the thought of seeing him again, but she forced it into submission. She didn't understand why he was doing any of this. Didn't trust it. No. There was a long silence before he said,
Good. I like a challenge.
I'm not trying to challenge you.
I know you're not. You're trying to get over me, which is worse.
Michael.
I have stuff to do. Talk to you later. Miss you.
The call disconnected. She paced about her office with increasingly agitated steps. He didn't want her to get over him. How irritating. What was she supposed to do? Pine over him for eternity? This burst of outlandish courting had started immediately after he saw Philip trying to kiss her when she didn't want it. Michael was trying to warn Philip off, because he didn't think she could protect herself. She was still his charity case. Breathing heavily, she picked up his note, crumpled it into a misshapen ball, and tossed it in the trash. That was what she thought of his pity. If she wanted to get over a man, she was going to get over a man. She sat down and read over the last few lines of code on the programming screen. Her brain was too distracted to concentrate. She kept thinking about Michael. Her body still yearned for his caresses and his dirty words. More than that, she missed him and the routines they'd made together. He couldn't really want her back, but it would be wonderful if he did. When she noticed the hopeful direction of her thoughts, she scolded herself and told herself to focus on the data. It didn't work. Making a frustrated sound, she fished his note out of the trash, smoothed it out, and stuffed it in one of her drawers. Each day that week, he called and asked her out to dinner. Each day, she refused. She didn't need or want his help. She could take care of herself just fine. As of Friday evening, her desk sported the vase of still lovely calla lilies, another vase of roses ranging in shade from blood red to pink, a bundle of balloons, and a fuzzy black teddy bear in a karate gi. She was far too old for stuffed animals, and the sight of it embarrassed her. Michael's extravagance was making her the talk of the office. She had to figure out a way to make this stop. When it was time to leave, she powered off her computer, grabbed her purse, and headed for the door, snatching the karate bear on the way out. She didn't want him, but the thought of him sitting alone in her office all night made her heartbreakingly sad. She squished the bear under her arm, making him as small as possible, and exited the building. No one needed to see her walking around with a stuffed animal in tow.
Heading home?
The solitary voice came from behind as she crossed the empty parking lot, and her heart leapt into her throat. She whipped around with a hand on her chest. Michael pushed away from the wall of her office building, thumbs hooked into his pockets. He wore a fitted black vest over an Oxford shirt that was unbuttoned at the throat, and dark slacks. Too gorgeous. She dragged her eyes away and went to pick up her bear from his abandoned location on the blacktop. Brushing off the bear's fur, she said, "This can be interpreted as stalking, you know." He ducked his head with a sheepish smile. "I know. You need to stop all of this.
It's not just a little romantic. I don't have a lot of experience with courting, so you'll have to excuse me if I come across too strong."
She pursed her lips, with his looks and charisma. She was sure all he generally had to do was crook his finger and wait for women to crawl to him. She didn't want to be one of those foolish women anymore. "Cut it out, Michael. We both know you're not courting me." His shoulders stiffened.
"What do you mean?"
"You don't need to protect me from Philip anymore. He's switched his attention to the receptionist."
"None of this has been about Philip."
He stalked toward her, his brow furrowed and his jaw tight. Her instincts told her to back away as he neared, but stubbornness had her digging her feet in. She lifted her chin. She wasn't scared of him. "I'm done being your charity case. I don't want..." Clasping the sides of her face in his hands, he kissed her. Sensation shocked through her, ending her struggles before they began. The cool silk of his lips on hers felt like heaven. As he stroked his hot tongue into her mouth, his salty taste and familiar scent intoxicated her. She gripped his shoulders and pressed her body to his. He surrounded her with his arms and aligned their hips. Her softness to his hardness. Liquid aching pervaded her limbs.
"Look at you melting for me,"
he rasped against her mouth.
"I've missed you."
He kissed her again, a deep, slow-tasting that curled her toes and made her sigh against his lips. Her hair loosened, and she shivered as he threaded his fingers into the mass.
"Pretty Stella,"
he whispered, running his hands over her loose locks.
"Might not have the hang of courting, but I kiss you right."
That snapped her out of her kiss-induced haze immediately. She jerked free of his arms and wiped the sleeve over her mouth. "Don't kiss me! Don't touch me! I don't want you doing anything with me out of pity!"
"Why do you keep talking about pity? I never said I pitied you,"
he said with a frown. "Then why didn't you take my money?" Without waiting for his response, she retrieved the bear from the ground for the second time. She wanted to hug it close, but she made herself hand it to him. "This past week was nice, but I've had enough. I'm asking you to stop, please."
"Does that mean you no longer have feelings for me?"
A film of moisture glossed over her eyes, and she spun away from him blindly. "I'm going to go now."
"Because I have feelings for you."
She froze, felt his hand close around hers and pull until she faced him once again. He tipped her chin up, and her tears threatened to spill free. Had he really said that? With her heart drumming in her ears like this, she must have misheard. He took a breath, released it, took another.
"I didn't take your money because I'm in love with you. I told myself you needed me, that helping you would prove I wasn't like my dad. But those were just excuses to be with you. You don't need me, and I don't have to prove I'm not like my dad. I know I'm not. I ended things because I was certain you didn't love me back. But when you said you were going to get over me, you gave me hope."
Her skin flushed with heat. Her hands, her neck, her face, the tips of her ears. He didn't pity her. He loved her. Had she heard correctly? Was it true?
He swallowed once. "Could you say something, please? When a guy tells a girl he loves her, he doesn't want silence in response. Was I too late? Are you over me?"
"Are you wearing the underwear I got you?" Laughter cracked out of him.
"Sometimes the way your mind works is a complete mystery to me."
"Are you?" She transferred the bear underneath her arm and tucked her fingers into the waistband of his pants, above his leather belt. Lips curving, he unfastened his belt, unbuttoned his pants, and drew the zipper down.
"If we get arrested for lewd acts in public, they better let us share a cell."
She pulled his shirt tails out of the way, and even in the poor lighting of the parking lot, she could see the red plaid of his boxers. She lifted her eyes to his as effervescent warmth pervaded her body. filling her heart and spreading to every extremity. He did love her, and her theory was confirmed. Michael's beta had changed from 1 to 0. For her. You're wearing them.
I don't like to go commando. Chafing. Trying to suppress a goofy grin, she straightened his pants and belt. Women buy underwear for the men they love. It's economics. Data supports this claim.
Are you telling me you love me, Stella?
She hugged Karate Bear tight and nodded, suddenly overcome by shyness.
You're not going to give me the words?
He asked. I've never said them to anyone but my parents.
You think I run around telling women I love them?
He pulled her close and pressed their foreheads together.
I'm going to get the words out of you. Tonight.
Should I be worried?
Yes.
What are you going to? The heat in his eyes stalled her words.
Let's go home.
Okay. Instead of leading her down the street toward her house, he brought her to a small silver Honda Civic and opened the passenger door for her.
I traded in my car, he said with an awkward shrug.
She sat and buckled her seatbelt, taking in the clean, non-leather interior of the car.
Nothing about it reminded her of Eliza.
I like this better.
You would.
He smiled as he got behind the wheel.
I'm partnering with Quan to start a clothing line, and I needed startup funds. Since I'd quit escorting, there was no reason to keep that car.
He was finally doing it. Quitting escorting, taking chances, and making a name for himself. In that moment, he was so perfect to her, she wanted to launch herself across the gear shift and kiss him until he was breathless. That's great. I'm so happy for you, Michael. But the thought of him selling his car because he needed money bothered her, especially when he'd returned her check. Do you still have some of your mom's medical bills to pay? Did the Foundation's medical assistance program fail to cover everything? He tilted his head as he frowned at her.
How do you know about my mom's bills, or the program?
After a moment's hesitation, his eyes widened.
Was it you?
She averted her eyes.
It was you, he said in a discovering voice. How did you know about my mom's lack of insurance?
That night at your apartment, I saw the bills, and I made the connection between the cost of her treatment and your escorting fees. I think that's when I fell all the way in love with you. A boyish grin spread over his lips.
I was going to get those words out of you in the most delicious way.
But then his smile vanished, replaced by a thoughtful line.
It must have cost a fortune. You started an entire medical program. Just how rich are you?
She worried her bottom lip as she continued to hug the teddy bear. I'm not that rich anymore. Well, I'm kind of rich. It depends on how you define it. You're probably not going to like it. Are you sure you want to know?
Out with it, Stella.
I had a trust fund. There was about $15 million in it, she said with a shrug. I donated it to the Palo Alto Medical Foundation to start that medical program.
You gave away your entire trust fund?
For me? That's kind of what you're supposed to do with money like that, isn't it? Give it away? I can support myself with my salary. It's just money, Michael. And I couldn't stand the idea that you were being forced into escorting. If you want to do it, that's one thing. But if you don't, she shook her head. I was determined to give you a choice. Besides, we're helping lots of families now. It's a good thing.
We?
He leaned forward and kissed her cheek, the corner of her mouth.
That was all you. That money was not mine.
He pressed a series of kisses to her lips.
Thank you for giving me that choice, so I could pick you. Thank you for being you. I love you.
She couldn't help smiling then. She didn't think she'd ever get tired of hearing him say that. Now I can say my boyfriend is a designer with complete confidence. That is, if you are my boyfriend.
Are you?
Instead of answering right away, he started the engine and drove out of the parking lot. Eyes on the road, and voice casual, he said,
I better be your boyfriend, since I'm asking you to marry me in 3 months. Stella's jaw dropped as shock washed over her in waves that alternated between hot and cold.
Why are you telling me this?
A small smile played on his lips as he darted a quick glance her way before focusing on the road once again.
Because you don't like surprises, and I figured you'd need time to get used to the idea.
He was right about that. But before she could dwell on it too much, he dropped one of his hands from the wheel and caught hers, interlacing their fingers the way he always did. Saying nothing, she let the moment wash over her. The uncertainty, the breathless hope, the anxiousness, and the shimmering contentment. The sight of their intertwined hands pleased her. So different, but still five fingers and five knuckles, the same general blueprint. She tightened her grip, and he squeezed her back, palm to palm. Two lonely halves found comfort together.
Epilogue.
4 months later. Stella strolled down a quiet sidewalk in San Francisco's Warehouse District, a discreet corner of town inhabited by several West Coast-based fashion businesses. After opening an unmarked door, she entered an industrial space consisting of steel walls, cement floors, and exposed ceilings. A photo shoot was in progress on the far side of the room, and Stella smiled as she took in the models showcasing Michael's latest designs. It was barely autumn, but the models presented his winter line. Children ranging in age from preschool to tween posed in exquisitely tailored, miniature suits, vests with matching newsboy caps, sweater dresses, and fur-trimmed mantles. Quan saw her first.
"Hi, Stella."
He waved at her absently before continuing an animated discussion with the camera woman. Michael paused in the middle of tying the golden ribbon on a little girl's white chiffon evening dress and glanced up at her, brightening.
"You're early."
"I missed you."
His smile widened, and he patted the little girl on the shoulder and directed her toward the set, where a coordinator was positioning the children and the props. As he walked to her, he tucked his hands into the pockets of his slacks and swept an appreciative gaze over her navy blue skirt suit and the scarf loosely wrapped around her neck. She knew he was admiring his clothing selection for her today, and her lips thinned as she suppressed a smile. The things that made him happy. When he reached her side, he leaned down and kissed her on the mouth before trailing his hands down her arms and capturing her hands. He brought her knuckles to his lips and brushed a thumb over the fingers on her left hand, drawing her attention to the respectable trio of diamonds sparkling on her ring finger.
"I still can't believe you went into debt to buy me this," she said.
Even so, she had to admit she loved everything it represented. She'd never been into jewelry, but she caught herself gazing at her ring more often than she'd expected and, invariably, thinking of Michael. When people at the office caught her grinning for no apparent reason, they rolled their eyes and muttered under their breaths,
"I needed to announce how taken you are. Also, as of this morning, I'm officially out of debt. Quan got us the venture backing. We're opening 3 new stores by Christmas."
She mentally ran the numbers, and excitement bubbled inside of her.
"That's really fast. You're doing even better than the high-growth trajectory I developed for you."
"We are. Your analytics are part of what convinced the venture capitalists, actually."
"I think it was your designs and aggressive marketing strategy."
"Okay, that may have had something to do with it."
He laughed, but the look in his eyes was soft.
"Having you with me this whole time has meant everything to me, though. I hope you know that."
"I do."
The past few months had been busy for the both of them, but together, they'd made it work. "It's the same for me." His expression went serious.
"You said you were having the meeting with the partners at your firm today. How did it go?"
"They offered me a promotion again. Principal econometrician. 5 direct reports in addition to my trusty intern."
"And?"
She took a breath before saying, "I accepted it." His lips fell open, and in the next moment he crushed her in a fierce embrace. He pressed a kiss to her temple.
"Do you regret it?"
She burrowed closer to him and breathed in his scent. No, I'm nervous about it, but mostly, I'm happy. So proud of you. She smiled so big her cheeks ached. The promotion comes with a large bonus. I'm warning you in advance. I'm buying you a new car. When he pulled back, she worried he was upset. She couldn't read the shuddered look on his face as he said, I can buy myself a new car. She bit her lip to keep from frowning, but she understood if he had to earn his own way. She didn't need to spoil him. She just wanted to.
But I want the same model as yours, he continued. And I like black.
She tilted her head to the side and drew in a slow breath. Does that mean?
It means if you want to buy me a car, I want to drive it.
His lips curved with a suggestive grin and his eyes danced.
If you want to buy me boxers, I want to wear them.
Her chest filled with lightness, and she grabbed his hand so she wouldn't accidentally float away. It means you love me. He interlaced their fingers the way he always did, and squeezed.
That's right. It's economics.
This recording of The Kiss Quotient was presented by Dreamscape Media, LLC. Text copyright 2018 by Helen Huang. Sound recording copyright 2018 Dreamscape Media, LLC. This recording was produced by arrangement with Penguin Random House. Thank you for listening. Please check www.dreamscapeab.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.